I want to tell you about the King of New Hampshire, but it's going to require a bit of backstory, so buckle up. We're going on a ride. Timothy Dexter was born in the colonial Massachusetts town of Malden, way back in 1743. His parents were poor, and he spent a good amount of his youth bouncing between work on a neighbor's farm and apprenticing in the leather-making trade, which was a good thing. Apparently, nearby Charlestown was the main hub for all leather work in Massachusetts at the time. Through a combination of shifts in ladies' fashions and the introduction of Moroccan leather, Timothy found himself on the swell of a rising wave, and he threw himself into making the most of it. He learned the trade and then set up a shop all on his own, and it led to much success. And money, of course. A few years later, he married a wealthy widow, and they went on to have several children. But in the years between the end of the Revolutionary War in 1783 and the adoption of the Constitution in 1789, something happened. You see, when they kicked England out of the colonies, that also meant leaving their robust financial system. So a lot of wealthy colonists found themselves transformed into less wealthy Americans. Following the example of John Hancock, however, Timothy took a gamble and invested in some securities sold by the state of Massachusetts. And it paid off. Timothy Dexter found himself in possession of a considerable fortune. And because it had worked so well for him, he continued in that early American version of playing the stock market and just kept on winning. Something to keep in mind about Timothy Dexter is just how dead set he was on achieving greatness. He claims to have known his whole life that he would reach the heights of society. He once wrote about how his day of birth was so auspicious that it hinted at power and wealth. "I," he later wrote, "was going to be one great man." So, yeah, Timothy Dexter had a bit of a chip on his shoulder. He wanted to fit in with the wealthy elite of Boston, but it was already a tightly guarded social circle. Nearby Salem was just like it, or maybe even worse. So he moved farther north to the city of Newburyport, which sits on the coast where the Merrimack River meets the Atlantic. There he bought a palatial home about a quarter of a mile from the shores of the river. They say the views were stunning and that the property itself was the very picture of an English manor. It was well built, beautifully crafted, and tastefully appointed. And yet it didn't fit Timothy Dexter's image of the mansion he was destined to inhabit. So he changed it. Along the front of the property, where the street passed by, he built an elaborate fence that was broken up every few feet by tall white columns, perhaps 15 feet or so high. Atop each of them, he placed a statue. There was George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, as well as John Adams and the figure of Lady Liberty. Well-known Native American leaders and philosophers all shared space with American political heroes. He also had towers added to the upper floor of the mansion. The entire exterior was painted in a vast array of colors, and he even had dozens of accent pieces covered in gold leaf to catch the sun and, of course, show off that wealth. He was that sort of person who had a lot of money and wanted to find the best and most effective way to show all of it off. And it worked, too. People passing by the house would stop and look. One early description said it best. "This made the bumpkins stare," wrote Samuel Knapp in 1848, "and gave the owner the greatest pleasure." Finally, even strangers would know just how important and successful Timothy Dexter was. But that's not all people thought of him. It turns out, he was also a jerk. In the late 1790s, he bought an estate farther north in Chester, New Hampshire. He remodeled that home in the same manner, upset a lot of people in that community, and was even reported to have been chased off with a horsewhip. But that didn't stop him from declaring himself King of Chester. But no one else joined him in that fantasy, so he moved back to Newburyport in 1798. In 1802, he published a memoir that was equal parts philosophy and autobiography. It was called A Pickle for the Knowing Ones, and while it wasn't the first self-published book in history, it's certainly one of the worst. The biggest example of its insanity is that the entire 9,000-word document lacks punctuation of any kind. After complaints from readers, it was reprinted the following year with punctuation added, but not where you'd expect. It came with a full page of commas, periods, and question marks at the very end of the book. So big was his ego that he insisted on being called Lord Dexter. Then he began to prepare for his future fame and renown by building his own tomb. After that, he hired a cabinet maker to craft him an elaborate coffin with beautiful dark mahogany and four large silver handles. When it was finished, he tested it out himself and then set it up in a room for display. But apparently, that wasn't enough. Like a suburban husband with a brand new lawnmower, he just had to put it through its paces. So he planned a funeral for himself. It was to be a proper burial, exactly what a man of his position deserved. They say he bought his wife and children new clothes for mourning and had announcements sent out to friends and family inviting them to attend his funeral. Hundreds gathered that day as the procession moved outside his house and to the tomb he had prepared for it in another building. Some had come to mourn, but I think most had come to sigh collectively. All of them, though, believed that the funeral was real. What gave it all away was the shouting. You see, after the tomb had been locked and all of the mourners had returned to the house for a reception, an argument broke out in another room. It turns out, Timothy's wife had not done a fine enough job pretending to mourn for her not-dead husband, so he was beating her with a cane in the kitchen and screaming at her. Like I said, Timothy Dexter was a piece of work. But don't worry. On October 26th of 1806, all those years of excess, all the parties and food and drink and travel, all of it finally took its toll. At the young age of 59, Timothy Dexter passed away. One last note. After his death, Dexter's wife and children were left with that age-old task of preparing a loved one for burial. Now, perhaps it was the decades of foolishness they had to endure from him, or maybe that mock funeral just used up all of their available goodwill. Whatever the reason, he was never buried in that beautiful mahogany coffin inside his custom tomb. Instead, he was buried at the local graveyard, just like anyone else. Finally, someone put Timothy Dexter in his place.